Genoa.
And this is Yuzu.
And this is
In-Flight Entertainment. Yes, and this is Throwback LGBTQ Movie Month for Thursday. And we are taking it back to 1996, the year I graduated from high school.
The year I think I was supposed to graduate from college.
did it happen in 96 or what?
No, I was a 6-year senior.
Oh, okay. Imagine.
I was doing it right. I was having fun. I was studying a lot. I was taking a lot of random classes.
Okay. Do you remember the classes you took that year?
In 96?
Yeah.
Let's see. Where would I have been living? Yes. Let's see. What month did this come out?
October.
October. There's definitely some biology and chemistry classes. There was an intro to advertising. Mm-hmm. And there was romantic poetry.
Ooh. Gentlemen took romantic poetry, y'all.
Yeah, so that was, it was like medieval romantic poetry. So I can talk to you about, or no, it wasn't medieval. It was like, it was romantic poetry, but for some reason we did like the classics, like Ovid and Catullus. Okay. We did some Shakespeare. Nothing later than Shakespeare.
Interesting. All right. Cool. See? Jennifer can get romance with poetry if she wants to, but she chooses not to. But she chooses not to.
So what was happening in 96 when this movie came out?
Oh, okay. Well, 96, what we were watching.
Friends. Seinfeld.
Okay. Seinfeld is number two. Friends is number four.
Okay. ER was number three.
That was number one.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. I don't know if you're going to get these two. But okay. Number three was Suddenly Susan. And number five.
You know that I would never get that.
Yeah, no. And number five was The Naked Truth, which I don't remember.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Song.
I can tell you, Days of Our Lives at Noon. I think this was right around the time when, I forget what her character's name it was, but one of the characters was possessed by the devil.
In a soap opera.
Oh yeah, it was fantastic. Every day, like everyone scheduled their classes so that at noon you could like meet in the cafeteria and watch Days of Our Lives.
Wait a minute. Which one was? Was Luke and Laura One Life to Live?
No, I think that is...
Or All My Children.
General Hospital?
Oh, General, yes. General Hospital, yes. Yeah, yeah. I remember Luke and Laura. And Susan Lucci was All My Children?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. See, I know soap operas. Only because my mother used to watch them a lot. All right. And what song? It's like... The song of 96. The song of 1996. Let me tell you. It was number one from August 3rd to November 2nd. 96.
Was it a female singer?
Nope. It was.
Was it a group?
It was a duo. And it wasn't English.
Macarena?
Yep. Oh man, you cannot get away from this song. What blows my mind? It was number one from August 3rd to November 2nd. That's a lot of months at number one. Didn't what like the Democratic convention they were doing Macarena or something that year or something like that? The infamous.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, well, I found it. I'll post it. Well, and, that was a dark moment in Democratic, with the Democrats.
It's a dark moment in music history.
Yeah. I don't know, like all these white people trying to do
for all the, for all the youngins out there that listen to us, it'd be like, well, I was going to say the electric slide, but they probably don't even know what that is.
No, they don't know what that
is. I can't think of any.
What can they relate to that's like, ugh?
I don't know.
I don't know.
No idea. It'd be like if a TikTok dance took off and took over all music and all cultural things from the next like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. Not no bueno. No bueno. Oh, all right. So we talk about the year to go into our movie. I don't think we even introduced the movie yet. But this movie is 1996 Wachowski's debut called Bound.
Yes. So this is about a tough ex-con, Corky, and her lover, Violet, concoct a scheme to steal millions of stashed mob money and pin the blame on Violet's crooked boyfriend, Caesar.
Yes.
The cast of this is fucking amazing. We have Jennifer Tilly, who plays Violet. Gina Gershon, who plays Corky, the ex-con.
Gina.
Joe Pantoliano, who plays the slimy boyfriend, Caesar. And then we have Christopher Maloney with a full head of hair.
Yep.
Playing the bad gangster guy.
Johnny, of course, because he's Italian. Got to be a Johnny. Yeah. Is it okay? Can we talk about how like thin and lanky he is in this movie?
Oh my God. He's so skinny.
Oh, like, holy crap, this dude. Yeah,
yeah. Like he's wearing a suit and the suit just sort of hangs on him. It doesn't fit him compared to what he looks like on Law and Order, where you can see every single muscle in his thighs and ass.
Yes. We have checked plenty of times. Yes, we can confirm that. Yeah. Like I said, so like I said, 96 film calendar October 96. This is a year where, you know, we had it was a pretty good year from film 96. We had, you know, the first Mission Impossible dropped in 96, Independence Day dropped 96. This film 96, like I said, Wachowski's first feature film. The movie that catapulted the Wachowskis to do this, this little short, small independent movie. I don't know if anyone heard of it. It's called Matrix. So yeah, I mean, that was like, you know, their next movie. So
yeah, so basically, like, after the sisters release Bound, the studio saw what they could do with a very low budget, and how good their directing was based on that, and the studio gave them a shit ton of money to get to do The Matrix.
Right, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Yes.
Yeah, so, going back, I don't know how long it's been since I've seen this movie, but, like, actually, watch it again, I'm just taken aback, and I can see why Warner Brothers seeing this movie was like, oh, wow, like, they could do so much with so little, because it's almost, if you think about it, the movie almost plays out like a play, because it's limited locations, maybe, two main locations ish, kind of, but
sort of. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's two apartments that you see outside of the apartment a little bit, the lobby to the apartment building, and then a lesbian bar.
Right, exactly. So very limited locations, not a lot of characters. You know, and what you know, what's so great about this film is like if people that don't really know much about the noir genre, like, you know, like Double Indemnity or any Hitchcock stuff, it's like it's a good kind of tip of the hat to the genre, like bringing it into the 90s and, you know, keeping that, you know, that slick, sleek femme fatale, you know, heist, double crossing type elements of noirs that made noir so great back in the day in this movie. And yeah, I mean, they did the damn thing.
Yeah, this movie also, so there's one sex scene in the movie that is, it's actually a single shot sex scene because the sisters didn't want the studio to re-edit it and put in close-ups of random body shots. Mm-hmm. They actually had a technical consultant who was a lesbian. Her name was Susie Bright. She's actually one of the actors in the lesbian bar scene that came in. And that scene to me was fascinating because, I mean, it is a very steamy sex scene, but it's also done very much from the like female's perspective, the female gaze, the late women's gaze. And that rather than a whole lot of close-ups of boobs bouncing up and down, or close-up of the face of the woman when she's orgasming, you have like close-ups of the feet with the toes curling, the holding of the hands. It felt very intimate and appropriate versus just a sex scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very, unique. Like you were saying, it was like this one take of camera moving, you know, behind them, like you said, you know, around them, kind of, you know, like behind them, down, you know, like you said, you see the curling of feet, you know, they kind of come up in front of them and you seeing like the reactions of these two women, you know, enjoying each other. Yeah, no, you're right. It was steamy, it was intimate, and it was, you know, it was tasteful. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't Showgirls. Even though, like, I give props to Gina Gershon, who was in that movie again, also that one. But nah, it wasn't smutty. You know, it was very like steamy and tasteful, like very, you know, old, like it was almost old school. So pretty much like Corky is this is. She's out of jail. She's fresh out of jail. Did she get out of jail for robbery or I forget what she
for robbery? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So she's hired to, you know, be the, you know, the maintenance person, right? And this it was a condo. Is it a condo building or is it an apartment building? I
forget. It was a condo.
Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, she's, you know, snaking out drains and like painting stuff and, you know, she comes across, you know, Violet and her boyfriend, Caesar, you know, going into their apartment and they're to find out.
It's like the opening scene where we meet the three main characters, Caesar, Violet and Corky. They all step onto the elevator together. Mm-hmm. And Caesar's like standing in the front of the elevator because he's the man. So he has to be right there in the front and center. And then you have Violet and Corky in the back two corner, like opposite corners. Mm-hmm. And the immediate chemistry that you feel between Corky and Violet is just like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. This is where this movie is going.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And like I said, and I love how like, yeah, how Jennifer Tilly, how she plays Violet, like she's very calculated, but she knowingly comes off like she's naive of stuff, you know, but she's so much smarter than, you know, she put out that she is, you know.
The female characters in this movie do a great job of playing all of the men.
Yeah.
Because they're so like they're gangsters, and so they underestimate the intelligence and the planning and the everything that women could possibly do to them. And so they underestimate that the women could be planning a heist.
Right. Yeah. Which Violet lures Corky into this scheme to snatch, what was it, 2 million? 2 million.
It was 2.6 million.
Yeah, 2.8. 2.6 million from the head mob guy and have Caesar, Violet's boyfriend, like, you know, pinning on him. So the gangsters assume that Caesar took the money and ran off with it, while Corky and Violet, you know, go the other way with the money, and they won't come after them. So that was the plan, ultimately. And with noirs, as noirs go, you know, plans go south. There's always improvising. There's always, you know, trying to maintain the plan, even though there's a lot of like corkscrews and monkey wrenches thrown in it, you know. So it just kind of tests the wits of our characters who's trying to achieve the plan of getting away with their deeds.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, which, if you haven't seen the movie, we're not gonna spoil it, because I mean, it's good tension building in this movie. It's a lot of subversive scenes that you think is gonna go one way, but surprisingly, it goes another way.
There's a couple scenes.
Yeah,
in that way, and you know, you already mentioned that it definitely has an Alfred Hitchcock type of feel, but it also has like that gritty feel. It pairs well with our Monday Tuesday new movie, which had that dirty 80s feel. This has that dirty 90s feel to it.
Exactly. Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, it's very interesting. Like, you know, the movies that came out in the 90s, especially like the smaller films, you know, like this and like Crash and like Sex, Lies, and Videotape, you know, like those air quotes provocative, you know, like 90s, like not low budget, like mid budget. Okay. Back in the days, guys. Okay. Studios used to invest money in mid-budget films. Like, there wasn't small budget, there wasn't like blockbuster budget, but they would give like filmmakers like maybe like 20, like 25 million, maybe 15, you know, to do their movie. You know, it's big enough for them to tell their story. It wasn't 100 million, it wasn't 2 million, but they would allocate money for mid-budget movies. And that's kind of where, Miramax blew up, you know, cause Tarantino was like, hey, look what I could do with, you know, this budget, you know, and they're like, oh crap. Okay. Yeah, let's keep pumping money in these mid-budget movies. We went Oscars with these movies. Like, why not? But yeah, along the way, you know, studios just stopped doing that, which is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like nowadays studios are so focused on getting that big box office win the first week that they don't look at the long-term benefits of a film. It's all about that first week.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because we are probably missing out on some really great entertainment that wouldn't necessarily be promoted nowadays.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just fun. Well, I guess you could say, well, you know, the streaming services is picking up the slack for that, right? It's like, okay, I'll go with that. But then again, the streaming services have that agenda. It's like, okay, we need to get that movie that's going to bring us more subscribers. Like, we can't really, you know, do something small. We gotta, you know, Yeah, we got to get something big up in here so we can start, so we can lure some subscribers. So yeah, that's kind of like what the whole conundrum of that comes in.
Yeah. But I feel like when those things hit the streaming services, if your algorithm, like if you don't select those random movies, that the algorithm won't necessarily suggest these movie, these type of movies to you. So I feel like in the 90s, when I used to go to the movies, I think every Sunday with friends, and it was, you know, whatever was showing that we hadn't seen, we would go watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that was definitely how I saw a bunch of random movies in the 90s was because of doing things like that. I mean, honestly, like Swingers, I mean, now it's a cult movie,
mm-hmm.
very popular, but we saw it opening weekend because we had seen all the other movies at the theater. Blair Witch Project, we saw that opening weekend because we'd seen all the other movies at the theater. So,
right.
You know, you get to see. Also, the movies on Sundays were really cheap.
Yeah, I remember it was like, if you do the matinees before 5, it was like $2 or $3 or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, oh, those were the days. And also, and the good thing, like with movies, right, it's kind of like, you know, you and your friends were like consciously like, okay, this is movie day. This is movie day. But then, you know, you had your group of people that would fall back on, oh, well, you know, let me see what's at Blockbuster that I can rent. That's not, you know, whatever, you know. So it was like you had those two lives, so to speak. You know, it's like even for the people that just don't want to go, we just want to go to Blockbuster and just kind of see either A, what the person working there would suggest, or B, on the box cover that looks cool. You know, it was kind of like, yeah, those two. And, you know, yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I'm just kind of strolling down memory lane. Like,
yeah, I mean, Blockbuster was another way that I definitely discovered a lot of random movies that, like a lot of horror movies that I didn't necessarily ever got to see as a kid.
Mm.
And that's how I discovered them, through Blockbuster, because the folks that worked there knew what, like, could answer all of your questions.
Yeah, exactly. Be like, oh man, this is awesome. This has Rob Lowe in it, whatever. That's just like, oh, it's so cool. Yeah.
I mean, going to Blockbuster and saying, hey, I want a really random horror movie. And then discovering, why can't I think of who did the movie with the devil comic movie? Shit.
Hellboy?
Hellboy. Who did that one?
Del Toro. Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, his like early movies. That's how I discovered
his. Kronos? I think it is.
Yes, Kronos. Yeah. That's a fucked up movie.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you have that, you know, those old, and even like the obscure 80s movie, like horror movies, you're like, what the hell is this? But it's like, okay, like it was cool. Yeah. It was crazy, but I dug it. Yeah. So it's kind of like the whole thing of just having that outlet to discover, you know, movies, and just having like that, you know, like, I guess that spotlight, I guess that you would call it that. It's like, you know, when you and your friends was like, okay, I don't care like what's showing. If we haven't seen it, we're going to see it. You know, it's like, but like I said, we just have this oversaturation of like media. I was like, you know, everything, like Paramount Plus, Warner Bros. It's like media. It's like, we could just kind of, all right, what's streaming? What show is that? And you just kind of go someplace else. Like it's the buffet. It's all in front of you. You know.
Yeah. So this movie is an LGBT movie because we have the the two women that are lovers. But even though that's not the main part of the story. It just happens to be that these two characters are very much into each other. The story really is about underestimating women as they steal a bunch of money from the mob.
Yeah. And it's an awesome scene where, you know, Porky and Violet, they get a little hot and heavy on the couch. And then Caesar comes in, you know, sees the back of Corky's head because, you know, she's very butch-like, you know, with her, like, you know, wife beater, like, tank top on and stuff like that. Like, he comes like, what the fuck is going on there? And then she turns, then Corky turns around and Caesar just automatically disarmed, like, oh, yeah, hey. Like, oh, I remember you. Like, hey, you want a drink? And like, all of a sudden, just like totally flips to, like, oh, Violet would never be into a woman. So, yeah, so she's not a threat. You know, just like, I mean, it was only when I watched that scene again that, like, I get, like, oh, okay. Like, I get what they're going with, you know, kind of like underestimating, above all, women's sexuality for the most part, right?
Yeah. So our rating for this is sitting on the sofa, watch it, clean the house while you have it on in the background, or going outside and taking on the crazies.
Yeah. No, that's it down for me. I mean, I enjoyed this movie even more the eighth time around, you know. I'm going to say it's probably been like 10 year plus that I've seen this movie. Yeah, and this is a lot of things I caught that I didn't catch, you know, the last time I seen it. And yeah, no, it's good. It's a good noir. It's a good noir.
Yeah, it's a sit down movie for me too. There's something that the sisters do in filming this, and they do it a little bit less so in The Matrix, but they use the colors red and green a lot as an overtint. And the only time you really see blue on the screen is when the cops come in. They do that in The Matrix also. And normally those types of things really annoy me. But it's not like oversaturated. For example, the TV show Ozarks, they have an oversaturated blue tint to every scene that's just too much. I think the sisters do a really nice job of applying the tint to set the atmosphere of the film. I had never seen this movie before, but it's still a sit down for me.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I thought you caught this when it was in theaters.
Nope. I don't know if this would have shown in the Austin theaters.
Yeah, good point. Probably not.
Right. But it was on the same list as This Is Not Berlin. So wherever I found that list, you know, mm-hmm. It has some good movies on it.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. And so you said, but I'm like, yes. Like, I've been so long since I've seen that movie. I definitely need to get that in my collection. As well as movies like, yeah, I just need to have, because it's such a good 90s noir. And like the Wachowskis, it was just a glimpse of their cinematic brilliance before The Matrix. So yeah, definitely. So Bound, 1996. Check it out. It's on Amazon to watch for free if you have the Amazon Prime.
And also Hulu.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Hulu, yeah. Awesome. Definitely. Check it out. So until next week, we wish everyone safe physical distancing and
get those vaccines.
Yes. Peace.